In 2015, 19-year-old Stephen Smith was found dead in a roadside ditch in Hampton County, SC. His mysterious death was initially ruled a hit and run until the shocking revelation that his body was exhumed in 2021. Now ruled a homicide, Stephen's case has entwined with the high-profile Murdaugh family investigations. For 8 years, his mother, Sandy Smith, has fought in courtrooms, demanded answers, and refused to let her son's memory be silenced. But the more questions she asks, the more powerful forces push back, and the more dangerous the truth becomes. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1, A Body in the Road. It was still dark on the morning of July 8, 2015, when a call came into the Hampton County Dispatch Center. A young man's body had been found lying in the middle of Sandy Run Road in rural South Carolina. His head bloodied, shoes still on, cell phone tucked under his arm. No tire marks, no shattered debris, no skid, just silence and the unmistakable stillness of death. The victim was Stephen Smith, a 19-year-old nursing student from nearby Brunson. Within hours, the South Carolina Highway Patrol would label it a hit and run. No investigation into foul play, no autopsy notes questioning that conclusion, just a quiet assumption that Stephen had been struck by a vehicle and left to die. But to anyone who knew Stephen or saw the scene firsthand, something didn't add up. Stephen's family, particularly his mother Sandy Smith, was the first to say it aloud. "There was no blood in the road," she told local news. "If a car hit him going fast enough to kill him, he would have been thrown. There should have been more damage." There wasn't. Instead, there were bruises inconsistent with a car crash, a 7-inch gash on his head, his loosely tied shoes still on his feet, a physical improbability in most vehicular impacts. His wallet was untouched, his body looked positioned. Still, the official ruling remained unchanged, hit and run. Stephen's death was closed, quiet, filed away. But Sandy couldn't move on. She couldn't bury what felt like a lie. Stephen had been openly gay in a deeply was a boy who never came home. And behind every promise of justice was a question no one had yet answered. Who killed Stephen Smith? Chapter 6, Pressure and Power. By the summer of 2023, Stephen Smith's case was no longer just a reopened investigation. It was a test of who could be trusted, a test of how far influence could reach, and a test of how much pressure a grieving mother could endure before the weight of power crushed her. For Sandy Smith, the national spotlight came with a cost. She began receiving anonymous threats, voicemails telling her to stop digging, warning her to leave the past alone. There were late-night knocks on her door, cars parked outside her home, engines running just long enough to make a point. But Sandy didn't back down. Instead, she leaned into the momentum. She hired additional legal support, including attorneys experienced in wrongful death and civil litigation. She filed multiple Freedom of Information Act requests and challenged the agencies that had stonewalled her for years. Behind the scenes, SLED investigators continued building their case. Sources close to the investigation hinted at major developments, but no arrests were made. Still, the agency's silence now felt strategic, not dismissive. For the first time, it seemed the authorities were taking the case seriously. But outside of law enforcement, political pressure began to stir. Rumors swirled that certain prosecutors were reluctant to touch anything that might implicate someone tied to the Murdaugh family legacy. Despite Alex Murdaugh's ongoing downfall, charged, convicted, and disgraced, the remnants of his influence still lingered in courtrooms and boardrooms across South Carolina. "It's not just about who killed Stephen," one legal analyst said. "It's about who helped bury the truth and who still benefits from it." Meanwhile, independent journalists and podcasters continued to chip away at the original 2015 case files. They discovered that one of the troopers who responded to the scene had submitted a written statement years later saying he was told, off the record, to back off. Another trooper recalled that certain witnesses who claimed to have heard rumors involving Stephen's death were never officially interviewed. The word cover-up was no longer just whispered, it was printed. And yet, no one was charged, no names were released, no arrests were made, the pressure mounted. Supporters of the Smith family held candlelight vigils outside the South Carolina State House. They demanded transparency. A few even called for a full investigation into the law enforcement agencies that had failed the case in 2015. But Sandy stayed focused. She didn't want revenge. She wanted accountability. She wanted to look her son in the eye, figuratively, and say she didn't let him be forgotten. And yet, privately, the fight was wearing her down. Friends said she looked thinner, quieter. Her eyes, once defiant, were now heavy with exhaustion. She rarely slept more than a few hours a night. "I'm scared," she admitted during a podcast interview, "but I'm more scared of what happens if I stop." Then, another development. New forensic results from the independent autopsy were submitted to SLED. The details were confidential, but Sandy's legal team confirmed the findings were inconsistent with injuries caused by a motor vehicle. Again, more pressure, more proof, but still no justice. In response, Sandy's attorneys filed a formal petition to subpoena individuals who were allegedly connected to Stephen in the weeks before his death. The petition was sealed, but speculation exploded across the internet. Podcasters dissected social media posts from 2015. Twitter users posted side-by-side images of Stephen and Buster Murdaugh at local events. Online forums turned into battlegrounds, some demanding Buster's arrest, others defending his innocence. It became harder and harder to separate truth from noise. But Sandy never lost focus. "I don't care if it takes 5 more years," she told a local reporter. "Stephen deserves the full truth, no matter where it leads, no matter who it touches." Her strength became symbolic, not just for her son, but for every family who had ever been told, "You're wrong, let it go." Now the world was watching, the system was shifting, and the pressure wasn't just on Sandy anymore. It was on everyone who had a hand in keeping the truth buried. Because for the first time in nearly a decade, it felt like justice might not just be possible, it might be inevitable. Chapter 7, "Justice Isn't Quiet," it began, with a mother's question. "What happened to my son?" For 8 years, Sandy Smith asked that question in newsrooms, in courtrooms, in Facebook posts, and folded letters, and prayer circles. And for most of that time, the world gave her no answers, but she never stopped asking. And then, slowly, things began to shift. In late 2023, after months of private investigations, legal filings, and new forensic analysis, SLED confirmed what Sandy had always believed. Stephen Smith's death was not a hit and run. It was not accidental. It was a targeted homicide. And more than that, it had been mishandled from the beginning. The public waited for names, for handcuffs. But Sandy had learned not to expect instant justice. "I don't need a headline," she said at a vigil. "I need the truth, and the truth takes time." Behind the scenes, the investigation turned inward, not just toward possible suspects, but toward the failure of process itself. Prosecutors began quietly reviewing old statements. Questions surfaced about whether officers, attorneys, or even local politicians had ignored red flags in 2015. The media caught wind. The walls that once protected power began to show cracks. More witnesses came forward. Former classmates of Stephen spoke openly for the first time. Some described being warned not to talk. Others admitted they'd been too scared. But now, Sandy's courage gave them a voice. Stephen's story was no longer a footnote in the Murdaugh scandal. It was center stage. And then came the press conference. Sandy stood behind a podium, flanked by her legal team and surrounded by candles bearing Stephen's face. Her voice didn't shake. "My son was a beautiful, brilliant soul. He was kind. He was ambitious. And someone took that from him. But they didn't take everything, because we're still here. We're still speaking. And we are not done." A journalist asked if she believed the case would ever be fully solved. She looked directly into the camera. "I believe in people. I believe in truth. And I believe that someone, maybe watching right now, knows exactly what happened. I hope they remember Stephen's face every single day. And I hope they know justice isn't quiet." In the months that followed, legal momentum grew. Civil proceedings were initiated to force depositions. The FBI expressed interest in supporting the investigation. And though no public arrests were made before the year's end, whispers from within the AG's office said, "Movement is coming." But for Sandy, the process was already a victory. She had pulled the truth into the light. And in doing so, she transformed her pain into purpose, not just for Stephen, but for every family that had ever been told their voice didn't matter. The road ahead remained long, but now she didn't walk it alone. Behind her stood a movement, a nation, a name that would never again be buried. Stephen Smith. He wasn't forgotten. He was a spark. And thanks to Sandy, he was finally being heard. Conservative county, often the target of bullying. He had told his sister he felt like someone was following him in the weeks leading up to his death. He had grown withdrawn, nervous, but he never mentioned anyone by name. Sandy pleaded for more investigation, for attention, for truth. But no one was listening. The case went cold. And for years, Stephen's name faded into the margins of local headlines. Another tragedy chalked up to bad luck and bad timing. Then, in June 2021, something changed. The murder of Maggie and Paul Murdaugh, a powerful Lowcountry family, long rumored to hold sway over police, courtrooms, and hush-hush secrets, put a national spotlight on the region. As journalists and investigators peeled back the layers of corruption around the Murdaugh name, whispers of past deaths began surfacing again. Stephen Smith's name returned, and this time people were paying attention. In a stunning announcement, SLED, South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, reopened Stephen's case, publicly stating that his death was being investigated as a homicide, not a hit and run. The change in classification came after evidence found during the Murdaugh double murder investigation pointed back towards Stephen's death. Suddenly, Sandy Smith wasn't shouting into the wind anymore. She was standing at the center of one of the most tangled and powerful cases in Southern history. But with renewed attention came renewed threats. People warned her to back off, told her to stop asking questions. But Sandy didn't flinch, because for her, it was never about vengeance. It was about truth, and it was about her son, the boy who didn't deserve to die alone in the road. Chapter 2, Stephen Smith, More Than a Case File. Before he became a name on a cold case report, Stephen Nicholas Smith was a bright, quirky, ambitious young man with a passion for helping others and a dream of becoming a nurse. Born in 1996, Stephen grew up in the small town of Brunson, South Carolina, a quiet, deeply conservative place where secrets lingered longer than seasons and gossip often passed for gospel. But Stephen never fit the mold. He didn't try to. He was openly gay, unapologetically himself, in a town that didn't always know what to do with difference. Teachers remembered him as sharp. Classmates called him funny and a little weird, but also kind. He was deeply close to his twin sister, Stephanie, and his bond with his mother, Sandy Smith, was unshakable. She was his rock, and he was her pride. Stephen worked hard. He made it into nursing school and had plans to transfer to a more advanced program in Charleston. He wanted to work in pediatric care, where his empathy and energy could make a difference. But behind the determination and optimism was fear. In the months before his death, Stephen began confiding in those closest to him. He believed someone was following him. He told Stephanie he thought he was being watched. He stopped walking places at night. He started locking his car obsessively. One friend said he had become paranoid, but for a reason. He never said who. He never pointed a finger. But something had shifted. Sandy noticed it too. He became withdrawn, careful, as if carrying something that couldn't be spoken aloud. And then came July 8, 2015. After a long evening of studying, Stephen was believed to have run out of gas along Sandy Run Road, an isolated two-lane highway bordered by trees and farmland. His car was found parked about 3 miles from where his body would later be discovered. But the scene never matched the story. Troopers found no glass, no debris, no paint transfer, no skid marks. There were no signs of a collision. And yet, somehow, Stephen's head was caved in. A 7.25-inch laceration to his right forehead. His clothes were intact, his arms outstretched, his shoes still on, his phone tucked neatly beneath him. First responders on the scene, veterans of vehicular death, said it didn't look like a crash. It looked placed. Even stranger, the coroner's ruling of blunt force trauma from a motor vehicle didn't come with an autopsy report that supported it fully. In the investigative files later obtained by journalists, multiple highway patrol officers documented inconsistencies and even noted that the death didn't appear to involve a vehicle at all. But no charges were filed, no suspects named. The case was closed. It would be 6 years before it opened again. And in that time, Sandy Smith transformed. She went from grieving mother to relentless advocate. She raised money for billboards, filed public records requests, showed up at hearings. And when journalists began connecting dots to the powerful Murdaugh family, she leaned in, carefully but boldly. Stephen's name began appearing alongside whispers of secrets held by the Murdaughs and their ties to local law enforcement. One name surfaced more than once, Buster Murdaugh, Paul's older brother and the eldest son of disgraced attorney Alex Murdaugh. Rumors swirled about Stephen and Buster knowing each other. Some even speculated about more than friendship. No official connection was ever proven, and Buster has publicly denied any involvement in Stephen's death, calling the rumors baseless and vicious. Still, Sandy wanted one thing: exhumation. In 2022, with national eyes on South Carolina's Murdaugh dynasty, Sandy launched a GoFundMe to have Stephen's body privately exhumed and re-examined by an independent pathologist. The fundraiser shattered its goal in under a week. The tide was turning. For the first time in years, truth felt closer. But Sandy knew better than to feel safe, because in Hampton County, justice was never free, and power never let go of its grip without a fight. Chapter 3, Exhumation and the Breaking Point. In March 2023, after nearly 8 years of silence, resistance, and grief, Stephen Smith's body was exhumed. It was an act of defiance, an act of courage, and a mother's final push against a system that had failed her son. Sandy Smith, armed with legal clearance, national support, and private funding from over 6,000 donors, authorized a second autopsy, one free from local interference. This time, the examination would not be influenced by politics, powerful families, or flawed assumptions. The operation was handled quietly but precisely. Security was present. A private team ensured the remains were transferred under strict chain of custody protocols to a forensic lab outside the state. The results were sealed, but what came next was loud. Just days after the exhumation, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, SLED, formally announced what Sandy had believed all along. Stephen Smith was murdered. No more hit and run, no more speculation. Homicide. The weight of that word wasn't lost on Sandy. She stood before cameras, holding a framed photo of Stephen, tears steady, but her voice strong. "This changes everything. My baby didn't die by accident. Somebody did this, and they will not hide anymore." The announcement ignited a media firestorm. People wanted to know, why now? What had changed? And who had something to lose if the truth came out? Behind closed doors, Sully D. agents were already working new leads. They interviewed old witnesses, cross-referenced prior statements, looked at names that had been whispered about for years. One of those names, again, was Buster Murdaugh. In a rare move, Buster released a public statement through his attorneys. "I have tried my best to ignore the vicious rumors about my involvement in Stephen Smith's tragic death, but I cannot remain silent any longer. I unequivocally deny any involvement and urge the media to stop these baseless accusations." But the scrutiny didn't stop there. Investigators turned their attention to the initial handling of Stephen's case in 2015. Files showed that the coroner at the time had ruled the death blunt force trauma, not from a car. Yet, law enforcement labeled it a hit and run within hours. Why? Some of the original Highway Patrol officers even went on record years later expressing concern. One investigator wrote, "This is not consistent with a vehicle accident. The injuries don't line up. We were told to stop asking questions." That line haunted Sandy. Told to stop asking questions. Who told them? And why? Stephen's case was no longer just about how he died, but about how his death had been buried under paperwork, red tape, and silence. It became clear that someone had gone to great lengths to steer the investigation away from murder. Even as national media linked the story to the Murdaugh dynasty, Sandy didn't point fingers. She didn't name names. Her focus stayed on Stephen. "This isn't about a family feud. This is about my child." Still, the connections were impossible to ignore. A law firm connected to the Murdaughs had worked with the original coroner. One of the investigating agencies in 2015 had ties to the Murdaugh legal circle, and Stephen had once tutored classmates who were close to the family. The deeper you dug, the harder it became to separate fact from cover-up. But Sandy wasn't backing down. In April 2023, her legal team filed motions to gain access to withheld evidence. Independent journalists release podcast episodes and YouTube exposés digging into case documents the public had never seen before. And the community, once silent, began speaking up. Teachers, neighbors, former classmates, people who had once been afraid now felt permission to remember, to re-express what they had buried. One former classmate said on camera, "Everyone knew Stephen was scared of someone. He just never said who." Another admitted, "We all knew something was off about the way they handled his case. But when the name Murdaugh came up, people stopped talking." Now they couldn't stop, because Stephen Smith's story wasn't just reopening a case. It was exposing a system. And for the first time, the cracks were showing. Chapter 4, The Murdaugh Shadow. To understand the resistance surrounding Stephen Smith's case, you have to understand the power that hovered over it, the Murdaugh family. For nearly a century, the Murdaughs reigned over South Carolina's Lowcountry legal system like royalty. Three generations of the family served as solicitors, essentially district attorneys, across five counties. They didn't just know the law. They were the law. Their influence ran deep. Judges, police chiefs, coroners, clerks, most owed something, directly or indirectly, to the Murdaugh name. So when whispers emerge that Stephen Smith, a young, openly gay man from a working-class family, may have had a secret connection to Buster Murdaugh, the implications were explosive. Stephen's family had heard the name before. In fact, law enforcement officers who worked the 2015 scene reportedly heard it too. Early internal notes from investigators mentioned Buster, not as a suspect, not formally, but curiously, his name came up multiple times from multiple sources, all within hours of Stephen's body being found. Some said Stephen and Buster had once been close, possibly more. Others denied it. There was no proof, no texts, no photos, just rumors. But rumors in a small town with a long memory and short patience can feel like truth. Sandy Smith has never publicly accused Buster Murdaugh or any member of the family. She's been deliberate in keeping her campaign focused on evidence and accountability. Still, she knew what she was up against. "People are scared," she told reporters. "You grow up around here, you learn who not to cross." The Murdaughs were on that list. By 2021, however, the family's grip on power had begun to unravel. Alex Murdaugh, the patriarch and powerful attorney, became the center of a national scandal involving embezzlement, drug abuse, fraud, and, most shocking of all, the double murder of his wife, Maggie, and son, Paul, in June of that year. Suddenly, the invincible Murdaugh brand collapsed into something toxic. The public wanted to know everything, every hidden case, every quiet death. And Stephen Smith's name resurfaced like a body held underwater too long. The timing wasn't a coincidence. When SLED announced they were reopening Stephen's case in connection with the Murdaugh O'Scurries investigation, it shattered the long-held belief that his death had been fully resolved. What evidence had emerged during the Murdaugh O'Scurries double murder probe that pointed back to Stephen? SLED didn't say. But Insiders hinted it wasn't just forensic. It was narrative. Stephen was the first unusual death connected, however loosely, to the Murdaugh timeline. Others soon followed. Mallory Beach, who died in a boat crash involving a drunk Paul Murdaugh. Gloria Satterfield, the Murdaugh housekeeper, who died under mysterious circumstances at their home. Alex's financial crimes, exposed only after the murders, brought his world into the light. Suddenly, what had once been brushed off as coincidence began to look like pattern, and Stephen's case, long dormant, became the moral tipping point. Because he wasn't rich, he wasn't connected, he wasn't protected, he was just a smart, kind, working-class teenager who may have known something, or someone, he shouldn't have. In this atmosphere, even Buster's silence spoke volumes. While never charged, never formally questioned in public view, his name became inextricably tied to the Smith case. He broke his silence only once, in a written statement condemning what he called the vicious rumors about his involvement. "I've been targeted for something I had no part in," he wrote. "The media has exploited a tragedy and turned it into clickbait." Still, the damage was done. Podcasts, YouTube documentaries, hashtag campaigns, everyone wanted the truth about Stephen. And for many, that included answers from Buster. But the focus wasn't just on him. It was on why this case was so badly handled from the start. Why was it closed within hours? Why were so many questions ignored? Why did the community, the schools, the police, the legal establishment fall silent? Because power protects itself. And for a long time, the Murdaugh name had cast a shadow large enough to make the truth feel dangerous. Now, with their empire falling, light was finally pouring in. And in that light, Sandy Smith stood firm with her son's memory, with her truth, and with the growing realization that justice might finally be within reach, but only if the next door opened wide enough. Chapter 5, The National Stage. The exhumation of Stephen Smith's body had made headlines across the South, but it wasn't until national media picked up the story that the Smith family's fight for justice became a movement. It began with a single podcast episode. Then came a documentary teaser. By the time mainstream outlets like CNN, NBC, and the New York Times began running segments on the Smith case, Sandy Smith went from being a grieving mother in Hampton County to the face of a broader national conversation about justice, class, and institutional failure in the American South. Journalists from across the country requested interviews. Advocacy groups offered legal help. Activists organized online petitions demanding charges. And the public, moved by Sandy's quiet strength and unwavering voice, began to see Stephen not just as a headline, but as a human being, a son, a brother, a victim who'd waited too long to be believed. The attention was overwhelming at times, but Sandy welcomed it. If this attention helps one more family speak out, if it makes even one officer think twice about closing a case too soon, then it's worth it, she told CBS News. Meanwhile, SLED remained tight-lipped. They confirmed the homicide investigation was active, but refused to comment on suspects or possible indictments. Behind closed doors, investigators were revisiting evidence, re-interviewing witnesses, and, according to legal insiders, identifying key gaps in the original 2015 inquiry. There were rumblings of a grand jury, but nothing official. Still, the Smith family pushed forward. They partnered with an independent forensic team to analyze data collected from Stephen's cell phone, vehicle, an autopsy. One report raised questions about time of death inconsistencies, suggesting Stephen may have been killed hours earlier than reported. That detail, seemingly minor, challenged the entire foundation of the original timeline, and it opened a new question. Where was Stephen really killed? Was his body moved, staged? Had someone with access and influence altered the scene before law enforcement ever arrived? Theories flooded social media. Some pointed to gaps in law enforcement logs. Others referenced alleged party attendees on the night of Stephen's death, names that had never been made public. But Sandy stayed grounded. "I don't care about rumors," she told one podcast host. "I care about facts. Bring me the truth." That truth became harder to pin down as more people came forward, anonymously and often reluctantly. One tipster claimed they had seen Stephen get into a car the night he died. Another reported hearing a confession from someone at a house party a few towns over. None of it was confirmed, but none of it was ignored either. As the attention mounted, Buster Murdaugh's name re-entered the headlines, despite no formal link to the investigation. His attorneys issued another statement, reiterating his denial and condemning what they called trial by TikTok. It didn't stop the momentum. The Smith family now had the backing of thousands of supporters, people from around the country who saw in Stephen's story a mirror of larger truths, that the justice system often fails the marginalized, that power shields itself, and that sometimes it takes a village not to raise a child, but to protect their memory. Sandy found herself giving speeches at vigils, attending legal panels, appearing on national morning shows, and yet every time she walked back into her home in Brunson, she returned to the same quiet grief. Stephen's room, still untouched, his shoes by the bed, his notebooks on the desk, his dreams frozen in time. Justice wasn't about fame. It wasn't about punishing someone rich or powerful. It was about breaking the silence that had buried her son. And now the silence was broken. But the battle was far from over. Because behind every headline was a family still waiting, behind every hashtag.